Well, that's going to have to be our new intro music to the Brown Briefly today, since someone has come along and taken away all of our sound effects, our intro, everything to the Brown Briefly is missing from the computer. I'm very upset. I didn't notice it until the last minute.
It's a conspiracy.
I think it must be from some of those, what was the name
of those right-wing Republicans.
Conservative Christian right-wing Republican straight white American males. That's what
they got into our computer.
They got into our computer and they messed it up. So, hey, are you guys all there this morning?
We are.
Oh, I'm hearing you. Okay, here we go. It's working. So, hey, I'm going to introduce, first off the bat, is our island historian and guardian of the galaxy, Bruce Hallman. Bruce, you want to take over the duties of introducing the folks today?
I will. And if I can get some help from Michael for sound effects.
since our sound effects
are
missing today.
Yeah, right.
Yes, we're going to need you, Michael. So this is Tuesday, May 19th, 2020, in the year of the tweet.
There you go.
I'm out of practice.
And of the global pandemic. Now, waiting to hear a crowd screaming noise. Maybe we all should go. With us this morning in the Gene Bush studio in bustling and bodacious downtown Vashon, while the rest of us, or most of us anyway, are lounging comfortably at home in our PJs and zooming into this show, is our master of the virtual mix and Zoom modulating sound engineer, Truman O'Brien.
I have a new title, Zoomologist. I'm the Zoomologist. Yeah.
I like that.
It's good, that huh? Kind of,
do you get initials after your name with that?
You do. ZM.
All right. And in the studio this morning with Truman, sitting alongside at the
6 feet away. Six feet away,
with masks around their necks, but not over their mouths, is providing for us insightful feminist critiques of the actions of our reigning chief, Little Big Hands, and host of Vashon's Real Talk, is Susan McKay. Susan, who do we have to look forward to you interviewing today?
This morning is about money, and I like to call it pandemic payoffs. I'm going to have Deborah Diamond, who is an island tax specialist and head of the EOC's Unemployment Compensation Guidance Group. She's going to tell us all about the stimulus package, who gets it, how it works, and unemployment in Washington State, both of which have a certain amount of glitches and unintended consequences.
That should be fascinating. Thanks, Susan. Highly visible on our Zoom screen this morning is the phantom editor of Indivisible Vashon's weekly online newsletter for your consideration, Kevin Jones. Kevin, what's the next big thing on Indivisible Vashon's calendar?
Well, this week we are warming up for our monthly meeting on Wednesday at 7 p.m., and Myrna Hecht will be joining us with inspiration of her poetry project, which has been ongoing for the last month or so, with the stories of immigrants and their stories in times of this coronavirus global pandemic. And you will need to register for that meeting. So if you would like an invitation to register, you can email to kevin@indivisiblevashon.org. And you will let me know, and we'll send you an invite.
Great. It's also interesting, Myrna's working with the Vashon Archive Project and with Carla Brine, and we're actually archiving at the museum all of the things that are being collected by Myrna and by Carla and by others of writers during this time, and reflections of what's happening during this time of the COVID-19 pandemic. So future generations will have access to that. Now, joining us off the bench in this self-distancing semi-retirement is singer, thespian, landscape architect, half a bubble short of plum carpenter, Michael Jook, also known as Chauncey Gardner.
Good morning. It's swell to be back.
Yeah, it's good to have you back. So what have you been doing in your self-isolation?
I scored a plethora of rhododendrons for the garden just before the whole lockdown hit. So I've been busy planting. And of course, I got them in a while back, and they've bloomed and are blooming, and it's marvelous. The green has closed in around the entire place, and I've just been hanging out, missing seeing people in person. Missing hugging folks. I've had a few get-togethers, but everybody's spaced way apart. it's very gratifying, of course. But I'm like a lot of other people on the island here, I suppose, pretty huggy, and so it's kind of like .
So I want to know who's cutting your hair, though, Michael, because it doesn't look like mine. Look at this. I've got hair coming down to my chin.
Or mine.
Oh, yeah, come to think of it.
Oh, yeah.
If our listener could see.
Well, you got a little rim around the sides there. Yeah, you and Bruce, that's unfair.
Just sheared off with the,
Yep, right. Just the old clippers.
Yeah, that's old,
5 minutes and you're done.
Not a problem.
Must be nice.
It saved me $20.
There you go.
I'm looking at Kevin and seeing that he and Truman are in the same hair department.
Yeah, we're a little shaggish here.
Absolutely. Yeah, reverting back to the 60s look.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in fact, my cousin yesterday said, "Gosh, you remind me of somebody from the 60s. You."
All you need is a little shoe black on your beard.
Yeah, that's it, for sure, for sure.
Dye that beard.
Yeah.
The reason we had to reach so deep into our bench and pull Michael out of his retirement was because our Lynn Kerrigan, who is usually with us, our Dixie darling from the land of magnolias, is actually on the surgeon's table this morning having cataract surgery.
Yep.
So we wish her the best, and hopefully she'll be back next week in full form with us.
With improved insight, I'm sure.
I was going to say with a whole new view.
A whole new view of the world.
That's right.
Much brighter, let's hope, right?
That's right.
So, Kevin, you sent me a thing the other day, just yesterday, I think it was, about Secretary of Health and Human Services Alex Azar's suggestion that the underlying health conditions of Americans, and particularly in minority communities, contributed significantly to the death toll from coronavirus. Do you want to read us what Azar had to say, or do you have that in front of you?
I do, actually. What I'd like to be able to do is think about and talk about how we react to these statements that come from our leaders, and maybe depending on the context in which we see them or hear them, maybe in this case. Health and Human Services leader Alex Azar said, I'll quote, "Unfortunately, the American population is very diverse. It is a population with significant unhealthy comorbidities that do make many individuals in our communities, in particular African American minority communities, particularly at risk here because of significant underlying disease health disparities and disease comorbidities. And that is an unfortunate legacy in our healthcare system that we certainly do need to address." And now, this was a comment made in sort of response, right, to the now mounting death toll of Americans, which would likely be 100,000 people by the time the week is out. So kind of curious, because I think different people had different reactions to the statement, and curious what people think. I know I have my opinion. Maybe others want to venture in to see how they heard this.
I would just like to read Lynn Kerrigan's response, because she's not here, which I thought was right on. May I just read this?
Please.
Please.
She said, "The lack of exercise part made me laugh. We see what happens when Black people go jogging. They were kept out of all-white swimming pools for so long that the culture became one of not learning to swim, and their time at rivers were spent fishing and not scaring the fish by splashing. They have not been made welcome on hiking trails or public gyms or most anywhere but the football and basketball courts where we want them to entertain us with their remarkable physical prowess. Lynn says, I think we are afraid of them, as Michael Moore said, because we are so subconsciously guilty about all that slavery and discrimination and bad treatment that we think every one of them would do the same thing to us as soon as they got the chance.
Mm.
She goes on just a little further, but I thought that was particularly pithy and right on.
Particularly with current events, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it was partially a response to some of the things that I had commented on when I saw what Kevin had sent around. And the point I was trying to make in my response was that as a nation, Azar is correct. I didn't really see anything that he said that was incorrect. We are terribly obese as a nation. I wrote down a few things, looked into that a little more because I wanted to make sure I understood it. As of 2019, the Center for Disease Control figures Their figures show that almost 37% of adults in America now are considered obese.
Wow.
Not overweight, obese. And 17% of children. Now that goes from about 30% for Caucasians and about 40% for African American folks. So on this, you know, just what he said there was true. And we don't get exercise like we used to. I used to enjoy the heck out of PE classes when I was growing up. I loved that. A lot of schools don't even have physical education anymore. And they've cut back the recesses and things. Now, when you couple that with people who are people of color in our country who have to live in oftentimes substandard housing in urban areas, so there's more crowding, don't have access to health care oftentimes, and many of them live in what are called food desert areas. So there's a difficulty getting access to good vegetables, good fruits, everything fresh. When I used to walk into the Safeway on Hilltop where I shopped for years when I lived there, I was a very different array of foods than I find at the Thriftway on Vashon Island. That was all my point was that I didn't see anything that was incorrect about what he said, but the context.
Yeah, I agree. He was factually correct. And I think it's as much a class situation as it is a color situation, because in addition to all those other factors, most people of color live in low income circumstances where McDonald's is considered food and pasta is cheap. So the kinds of things that we get, fresh vegetables and fresh meats and so forth, are not within their price range either. So they wind up with underlying health conditions like diabetes and obesity. I'm not sure which comes first, but and heart disease.
Let me suggest what I find so insidious about this context is it's not only blaming the victim. You know, yes, I mean, he says at the end, we certainly do need to address these issues. But look at his beginning. I mean, this is sort of the traditional right-wing sort of blame the victim and potentially propose a solution that is a solution of getting rid of all these minorities. He says, unfortunately, the American population is very diverse. I mean, that's his beginning point. You know, if we weren't diverse, if we were homogeneous, if we were all white, if we were all wealthy, we wouldn't have this problem.
Heil Hitler.
So he's
wow, that went right by me, Bruce.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah,
me too.
I saw that.
You got to read the text, man.
Hearing you, and I thought I did. See, I thought I did, but I didn't see it in that. You know, I didn't. That's crucial. Unfortunately,
mm-hmm.
we live in, you know, and that, yeah.
And so
that is interesting.
So
I missed
that. Come across as looking, if you read it, you know, sort of superficially, you know, yeah, we need to address these underlying issues, but his addressing those underlying issues is essentially get rid of all the minorities.
Mm-hmm.
Then we wouldn't have those issues.
Make it homogenous, not diverse.
Correct.
Wow.
It's very subversive kind of stuff.
You know, I totally miss that as well, Bruce, which is, you know, why we're here to share our views of this thing. I was disturbed on many levels by this. Partly, I just was sort of blinded by the hypocrisy that I heard in this statement. But I agree that your observation makes it even more concerning to me, frankly. But the notion that here we have our health and human services leader, who's a member of the administration, who basically is taking as many steps as possible to wipe out the Affordable Care Act, and while saying, on the other hand, after now 3.5 years of this administration, we remember hearing it from the current president that we're going to deliver great health care. And it's going to be easy. And so all of these underlying health issues that the Health and Human Services Secretary is now using as an excuse for almost 100,000 dead Americans is basically unsupported by this wonderful health care that we are supposed to have had by now. And, you know, it wouldn't be... It wouldn't be bad in itself, other than the fact that the administration seems to be really working overtime to divert as much attention as possible away from the fact that we do have the absolute worst response to this virus on the face of the earth. Even now, if you start to look at per capita deaths, I would hazard to say that that we're now worse. In other words, in Europe, the largest country in Europe population is somewhere around 77 million. I forget if it's Germany, but I think it probably is. They only have, 200,000 people who have died. Well, we're about 5 times as big as Germany, and we have now 5 times as many deaths. So even our per capita death rate is now starting to eclipse those other countries. And frankly, thinking about it as per capita is really a false equivalence, because the idea being that what we're measuring is our ability to control the spread of a virus. It doesn't matter how many people you have. It matters how well you do to keep it from spreading to those people if you have 200,000 or 200 million. So the whole idea of Azar standing up and saying this, the blame the victim in this administration, which is supposed to be doing everything they can to help us, and in fact, they're not doing anything to help us, is just the hypocrisy that really put me kind of off the scales here.
Well said. Yeah, well said, boy. Here you go. What is the context, and how can we read this more carefully? How can I read this more carefully? That's a stellar points, and it really puts it from something, like you said, Susan, well, it's factually true.
Mm-hmm.
But now in this context, it's like, okay, factually true and malignant, malevolent.
Absolutely. I too was put off by that opening word, unfortunately. And it jumped out at me.
Yeah.
As exactly what it is, which is blaming the victim, which is, basically racist.
Yeah.
Patently racist. And I don't know, is there a term for economically bigoted? What is that called? Elitist, I guess.
Well,
that would be elitist.
Social injustice, maybe.
Yeah, right.
Or economic injustice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Kevin?
I do think, Michael, I really appreciate the analysis you did, for one thing, it does say, yes, could we all lose a little weight? I'm saying, yeah, for me. Right. So in other words, the statement from the HHS head, it sort of rings true for most of us. Right. Or if not, us personally, it says, yeah, I got a friend who could probably, be more healthy. But America does have, in other words, maybe our high death rate from this virus is due to underlying health conditions. But we need to, of course, look at other countries and see what the same status is, right? So we're so far ahead of everybody else, if you will, in terms of loss of life. Are we also that far ahead of everybody else in terms of these underlying health conditions?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, right? But it seems that to create an equivalence, that's another thing we'd want to look at. But nonetheless, the thing that really gets to me is that these statements on the surface sound, oh, yeah, there's truth there. Mm-hmm. But in fact, as Bruce points out, as we're talking about this context, it basically leads us to start to accept the comments that are coming from this leadership team as being okay. But mm-hmm. really, when we need to look a little deeper and less superficial and find out that underlying this, they really don't seem okay. And that was kind of the thing that brought this to my attention.
It's called blowing smoke. And that is definitely a blowing smoke comment.
And where are they blowing that smoke?
Yeah, well, I was trying not to be that way. Up the skirt.
See that,
yeah,
on the radio.
Right.
There's one other thing that I'll point out here, because I've had discussions with acquaintances on very similar topics about, certain shows that are very entertaining. They're very captivating, and they're basically delivering a message that is undermining some of the things that I as a progressive am trying to accomplish. And the person who's watching this says, oh no, these are, they're progressives, they're funny, it's entertaining, but it's a really clever packaging of content just like this. So these are not, I believe these are not just Azar woke up that morning and this came to mind for him. I don't think it's that simple. I think that there is an underlying messaging, and you can call it propaganda, but I really seriously believe that this all fits into this pattern. It is not just because people are trying to get entertainment bucks by putting on a cool show on TV. There's an underlying message here, and it's hard to see it. And it just shows how clever and how capable and how easy it is for us all to be, to not maybe see these underlying messages that are really there. So that's my conspiracy theory for the day.
Yeah. You kind of say that jokingly, but I think the propagandistic aspect of things is very real, I'm just going to say it. The Republican Party, as far as I'm concerned, is morally and ethically bankrupt now. This is not the party of my father. People have said that for some years now, but these folks are not concerned with governing in a responsible way that looks to the strength of the nation as a whole, the commonweal, all the people that live in the nation and our relationships with other nations, because those are integral, especially in the world today. This party, the GOP, now is concerned solely, I think, with getting power, as much of it as they can, keeping it in by whatever means possible, including voter suppression, including everyone's practiced gerrymandering at some time or another, but these guys have elevated it to an art that is just remarkable. And propaganda. And the propaganda is scary. Cynthia raised this the other day. She said she's concerned that we're kind of like the frog in the pot of water that's cold. And it's like, oh, it's a little warm. Oh, this isn't bad. Well, now, yeah, it's a little warmer. That's like a warm bath. That's okay. And then, next thing we know, it's boiling.
We're toast. Yeah, I agree, Michael. And I believe also that the media, the legitimate press, if you will, has been intimidated because they are expected to be fair and balanced in all their reporting. And so they have to address these ridiculous statements and this propaganda as if it has some merit to it. And instead of saying, that's a lie, they're not supposed to say that's a lie. They have to say things like, there's no evidence to support, or someone else might refute that. But we need to, someone needs to start standing up to these people and saying, that is a lie. That is not true. And you are committing a crime, like Trump's firing of Steve Linick. You may have already read this, but besides investigating Mike Pompeo's wife for using an aide to walk her dog, he was also investigating Trump's private sale to Saudi Arabia of weapons after Congress had said, don't do that.
Which is completely unconstitutional.
Right.
Yeah, it's part of this. That you, we could just start going down the list now of things like that. It's just the where does the corruption is run rampant. And it, I just read yesterday that the Republicans have now a campaign to, quote, monitor polling places, which was allowed by a 2018 federal court ruling. Prior to that, you used to have to get a court order. You used to have to go and show, here is the evidence that there has been something haywire with this polling place. A court ruled, no, you can just go ahead and, you know, monitor however. And so they're training. They hope to have as many as 50,000 volunteers to go to the polling places and, quote, monitor elections. Well, there's a history in place that's been documented of that kind of action being done solely to intimidate people
Absolutely.
Of color from voting.
Mm-hmm. And are these in states where they can do open carry?
They hope to have it all across the country, but I'm sure, yeah. It's just become so, the corruption is blatant.
It is. And somebody's got to stand up and say, this is a lie. This is wrong. This is against the law. And I'm wondering, Kevin, how the campaign to promote vote by mail nationally is going. Do you have some insight on that?
There are a lot of opportunities to do that. The people who run those campaigns have cited statistics of how many people have gotten back onto the voter rolls, and largely these are people who've been removed for some reason, and maybe not having voted in two or three consecutive elections, and also inconsistencies with maybe their signature. There's lots and lots of reasons why people get removed. There's a number of different groups right now that are writing postcards specifically to get people back onto those voting rolls. And I just wrote 40 postcards earlier this week and mailed them off yesterday. So there's lots of ways for people to get involved to help. And Reclaim Our Vote is one of the organizations. They operate in states that, Susan, you were sort of raising concern
yes.
about with open carry. These are states with 20% people of color. And people of color have sort of been very much targeted to be removed from voter rolls. And so we're reaching out to those individuals with phone calling and with postcards to let them know that they can get back on the voter rolls and that their voice matters and that they really should be back in the system.
Well, and can they vote absentee and or can they vote by mail? How many states are actually implementing vote by mail laws, and are there any proposed in Congress? I'm not aware of any. Bruce?
For a national, you mean?
Yeah.
No,
yeah, what did
I
say?
Don't think so.
Right.
I can tell you that the assessment that we've done, and it seems to have other groups who are assessing the White House race and the U.S. Senate race, have identified key states that are going to matter. And fortunately, every one of those states has a vote-by-mail system. The only one that's universal which means everybody gets a ballot like us in Washington, is Colorado. So of all the other states that will matter in the 2020 election, getting people to sign up for vote by mail is possible in those states and is going to make a difference in November.
I thought that California just passed a total vote by mail. Didn't they do that?
Did they?
Yeah, the whole state of California.
That's my understanding. Yeah.
That would be great. Yeah.
And I have the map. I could go find it. But it's intriguing to me. Like I've been doing some calling into Georgia, which is one of the. It's not clear to me how critical Georgia will be in November. But their system for every election, the primary, the general, you have to basically apply for a ballot every single time. And you can imagine, right, the burden that puts on you. Maybe it only takes, 15 or 20 minutes to apply for a ballot. But think if we had to do that every time we wanted to vote in Washington State. And the number of people who would be like, you know, I got to go feed the dog, or I got, you know, a child who needs to.
If they even know they're supposed to do that, if it's communicated to them clearly and widely.
Another reason we're writing postcards is to make sure people know even how to do that, mm-hmm. because you can imagine they're not being told.
So there is an HR bill 1604. And a Senate bill, 3299, it's a proposed bill that would amend the Help America Vote Act of 2002. It would prohibit states from imposing additional conditions or requirements on the eligibility of an individual to cast a vote in federal elections by mail. So there is a
movement afoot. Mm-hmm. Yes, good.
Well, I'm sure Mitch McConnell and his gang will be. Just Johnny on the spot pushing that through.
I mean, right.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, and they're already balking at the next round of COVID relief, which we've been pushing for some $4 billion, I think it is, to have states be able to do vote by mail. Mm-hmm. It's not an easy transition. Even if you have absentee ballots, right, there's still a whole staffing up of being able to get those ballots out on a larger scale. So there is money that's really needed, but I haven't looked lately, but I think the last COVID relief passed in the House, I believe, does include that kind of funding. That's now the Senate. We're already, as you mentioned, hearing McConnell say it's dead on arrival.
Yeah.
So, by the way, I did look. There are 5 states right now that have vote by mail: Oregon, Washington, Colorado, Utah, and Hawaii. And I believe that California just was added, if I'm not mistaken. So it's 6, actually. Mm.
That's my understanding, too, true. And there's a couple others who were moving towards vote by mail, a universal vote by mail, but I'd have to go and grab the...
Well, it says also that there are 20 states that permit voters to vote via absentee ballots, but they require an excuse. And then there are 6 states... where you can request a permanent absentee status. So it's growing a bit.
And I wonder if the COVID pandemic will influence those states, if in other words, sheltering at home is an acceptable excuse.
Could be. Yeah. That's of the 20 that permit.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Some of the calls we're making. And this is why, frankly, if I can put a public service announcement out for those who are inclined to follow Indivisible Vashon's work here. It takes time to reach these voters. It takes time for people to register. That in November, it's going to be really, really important. And so we feel we're building this wave of 2020 electors right now, 2020 voters right now. So that's why we're motivated to do this work today.
Good work.
And what's really going to be fascinating is see what the condition of the second wave of this pandemic, by the time it hits in October, November, how that's going to affect the turnout of voting at the polls. Because my suspicion, based on past pandemics, and based on the fact that a number of states are starting to ease restrictions in what most medical sort of experts are saying is too quickly and too rapidly, is that by the end of August, September, we're going to see the beginning of a second wave of this pandemic that's going to strike really hard in October, November, and December. And that's right in the middle of November. First part of November is when the national presidential election takes place. And so how are states going to deal with not a situation like we've been in for the last month, but a situation that is three or four or five times worse than what we've just experienced? And I think there's a real potential that there could be a major disruption of the American electoral system, and there could be a contested election. And if that comes about, then we're in a real constitutional crisis.
That would play right into the Trump administration's hands as well.
Well there's already some evidence that Trump is going to contest the election.
There is?
If he loses, anyway. And then adding a pandemic on top of that would give him additional information. And additional resources to contest the outcome of the election. So it's a very dangerous time for American democracy.
Jared Kushner in an interview recently stated, well, we're not sure about if there's even going to be an election in November. He made that statement.
It's been my fear is that that Trump will decide to
try and cancel
the election. Yeah.
Which he doesn't
have. I'm telling you, they've I see pictures of that guy and that Miller, his Trump's punk that is in charge of immigration. And I look at their pictures of them and their eyes are dead. I mean, seriously, these guys look like
zombies.
they have, you know, how much did you get for your soul? You know.
Yeah. Maybe they truly are puppets.
And it's been really frustrating for me. And I have to say, I've struggled to not to so much to keep my spirits up, but it's just so troubling to me that in the midst of something that we're going through right now, that our whole nation, our whole planet, all these people, endangered the way that we are, and the schmuck at the helm is not at the helm. You know, he's off tweeting.
Yeah,
he's off in the cabin instead of at the helm of the ship.
Yeah.
He's off tweeting and complaining about how he's being unfairly maligned by the press. It's just,
You know, Michael, I agree. I think anybody who's paying attention is living with a deep and underlying anxiety of what Bruce just talked about, the fact that our very democracy is on the ropes right now, and it could be taken over. And I think that sense of powerlessness that we all feel because our supposed representatives whom we elected to do jobs for us are not working in our behalf, not even the progressives and the Democrats. I don't see them. There's got to be something they can do to stand up to this and say, halt. Executive privilege, executive power does not go this far.
Well, I have to say that I'm a little bit heartened. I've often said that I have a number of Trump supporters that I know, especially that I see on Facebook and stuff. I'm seeing the rhetoric of yay Trump is waning a little bit, and ever since the pandemic kind of started, and I'm kind of hopeful that maybe some of that is starting to wane a bit, and that maybe they're starting to see the light. So
that would be nice.
Yeah, just a little bit.
The mayor, that's a good point, and I did take heart the other day, Truman. I heard on NPR, that commie radio station, a reporter speaking with the mayor of Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Oh.
Now, boy, you want to talk about the heart of, you know, Wyoming.
Yeah.
And they asked her about, you know, what's your feeling towards this administration's response? And she said, when I see that news come on with another thing that they haven't done, she says, I have had to just turn it off. This is not helpful. We are not getting any support. We're not getting any leadership. We're not getting the things that we need to help our people. And she was adamant about it. And I was like, dang.
Maybe something's happening here.
Yeah.
Good.
What's not? Republicans, moderate Republicans, are not making issues out of that at this point, you know. Yeah. And so it's, you know, there needs to be a stepped up sort of rhetoric and stepped up sort of campaign to sort of point out these failures and to make clear to the American public that they're being had. And I don't see that happening right now. And it's kind of discouraging. I mean, I'm very encouraged that Obama has actually begun to start speaking out.
Me too.
Yeah.
But Biden, you don't hear anything from Biden. You haven't heard anything from Klobuchar or Sanders or, you know, Kamala Harris or
Amy. Actually, Amy was on last night, and she did say, "Hey, we got to get going here. We got to do something." She was pretty adamant.
Was she saying do something about the pandemic,
or
was
she also just in general? I think. Yeah.
Oh, good.
Good. That the Democrats really got to get their act together. And by the way, I'm torn seeing Biden stoop to Trump's level, but he did label him the President Tweety. So
that's our job.
Yeah, I know.
Somebody's got to start saying
that. That means the campaign's in full swing now.
Yeah.
It is?
Yeah, I just wanted to mention, Michael, you mentioned Wyoming, and indeed in my assessment of the 2020 federal election and looking at where to put our effort, I ranked the states from bluest blue to reddest red based on 2016 election, and Wyoming is the champion reddest red state.
Yeah.
47.6% went for Trump. And just to give you a little perspective, only 42% of West Virginians, 5 percentage points less, and only 36% of Oklahomans, 10 percentage points less. Those are the top three Trump winning states, with Wyoming being 5 points at least ahead of the next reddest state in the nation.
Wow. Well, that's encouraging.
Yeah.
To have the, well,
the Cheyenne mayor is starting to become dismayed. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good news.
So we only have about 2 minutes left here, guys. And before we go, I just want to say, Michael, it is great having you back.
It is.
We missed you.
I have missed you guys.
And the second thing is that, Kevin, you've got to grow a beard. I mean, you're the only beardless one here. And we're all gray beards, you know, except for the lovely ladies. I mean, don't get me
Susan,
wrong.
Yeah. There's only one.
I need to grow a beard.
No,
get
you're
on the
you're
stick
fine.
There.
Yeah. The only beardless male, of course.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Well, I can share some photographs of what I look like in a beard, and let me do that, and maybe
might change our mind.
We'll understand why you're not you're growing right one now.
Okay. All right. So, hey, anyway, this...
It's probably part of the Irish blood in me.
There you go. Well, I'm an O'Brien, as you will. So.
Well, that's true. My Irish blood is not thick enough. That's
there it is. There it is. That's got to be the issue. So anyway, this Zoom thing is working really well, and I'm really pleased that we're all participating in it this way. And I'm happy that everybody can do this. And Lynn, if you're listening, we hope that everything comes out fine with you, and we look forward to seeing her back next week too. And Michael, are you going to keep coming to see us maybe?
Yeah, what the heck?
All right. Well, this is easy. This is easy. Yeah. You can do it with your pajama bottoms on, man. You know, come
well,
on.
Well, he's not wearing pants now, is he?
Yeah. I'm not sure.
I wasn't going to go there.
That's right. Just don't stand up if that's the case.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, Brooklyn Dodgers, look at that. All right. Okay, guys, well, we're about out of time. We'll see you all next week, huh?
You want to sing Harbor Lights,
everybody.
Michael?
We've got it right here.
Oh, you got it.
Yeah.
All right.
Michael, good to see you.
All right. See
Thanks
you guys.
For listening.
Bye-bye.
Ooh.